Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game. Here with me in studio, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Steven Weasel Hurley coming in here. But hey, just because he's not in studio doesn't mean he won't play hurt. He's a little under the weather, but he's still here to throw it down. Chris Rankin, welcome. He's here with us via Skype. How's it going, Chris?
Yeah, it's going well, man.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure you could be better, but what, I mean, you know, because fever, right? But I mean, hey, Roethlisberger played with a stomach illness. You're not going to let a headache slow you down here on the Student of the Game. But hey, we bring you football talk just the way you like it, and we never stop here at NGSC Sports. If you don't know, you better ask somebody. And that somebody you should ask that we're about to bring in here in just a second, actually, Ralph Garcia. He will be present at the Music City Bowl on December 30th, doing a lot of stuff. Actually attended the pregame press conference today. He'll be telling us a little bit about that game and why we should be excited. I know that college football on the whole is my second language, but you know what? I brought an interpreter in to take care of that problem and help me translate for me and you the big deal that is the Music City Bowl. But hey, let's go ahead and get him in here. Ralph Garcia, what is going on, my man?
Hey, Kyle. Gentlemen, nice to be here. Hey, you know, it's a cool day here in Nashville, Tennessee, and the crowds are out right now. Of course, there was the hot chicken eating contest. The Battle of the Bands was going on a little while ago, and LSU fans and Notre Dame fans have stormed Nashville, Tennessee. And even on a cool night, they're out there enjoying appears to be a great weekend in store here in Nashville.
You know,
the year coming in.
And that's the kind of thing that distinguishes those Southern games from their Yankee games. Hot chicken eating contest. That's something you would not expect to hear about at the Motor City Bowl as opposed to the Music City Bowl. I'm just saying. Hey, I'm not fronting on it. It's just a difference I observe. There you go. It's that simple. But, you know, Ralph, I'm looking at this game. And again, college football is my second language. I don't speak it poorly, but I'm not fluent. But here's what I know. I look at this game, Notre Dame, LSU, two big programs, obviously. Notre Dame, one overzealous receiver away from toppling the number three overall FSU earlier in the season, and then a string of losses after that, be it due to injury or whatever you want to call it. And then LSU, who did not get honors into making the playoff or SEC championship or anything like that this year, but still held as a difficult team to face in this particular thing. Beyond that, though, I mean, what is it that draws interest to the Music City Bowl this particular year?
First and foremost, and it's not even football related, when there's been a lot of talk around here, there's been interviews, and whether it's on TV or the radio that you've heard or on the streets as I was out there with the fans who are not from Nashville. Nashville is quickly becoming a big growing place in the United States for tourism, for people to come out and hang out. You know, there's the Predators here. The Titans are here. You have the minor league baseball team that's here. And, of course, the Titans, you know, leading the charge. But there's also big concerts. It's Country Music Hall of Fame is here. It's Music City, of course. And that's really drawing the people first, and it's nice to see that. But as far as the Music City Bowl, I mean, first things first is this is SEC country.
Yes.
Who's in it? It's the SEC. It's the ACC. And, of course, although Notre Dame's not officially an ACC football program, they do play some ACC football. So they are the representative there. LSU, of course, here from the SEC. This is, of course, the 17th Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. At the press conference today, and also with the summary as far as the game is concerned, you mentioned about the Fighting Irish. The Irish had a 1-4 November. More importantly, a four-game losing streak that saw a bunch of mistakes and errors. And everybody knows the name of Everett Golson, of course, in Notre Dame. But the problem with Golson has been seems like a lot in the last several years with college football. Turnover seems to be a hot topic issue with these guys, or at least something that goes on, and that really hurt them at the end. I asked Coach Kelly, of course, you know that there's a big dispute or conflict rather of the time that it takes in between the end of the regular season and the bowl season.
Yes.
But with that said, of course, and that four-game losing streak at the end of the season for the Irish, I asked Coach Kelly if He used the time to make adjustments, you know, with the mistakes, you know, to correct those mistakes. Of course, he was talking about for a win, and he said, yes, you know, that's what you use the time for. And there was a little goading and playing around with Coach Miles beside him. And, you know, for Notre Dame, you know, we think of Notre Dame. What do we think of first? It's Notre Dame. It's Notre Dame. But Notre Dame has, you know, football season not too long ago, a few seasons ago for the national championship. We know there were stories behind that. But for the Irish, they're coming in, as Coach Kelly said. He doesn't really – playing both quarterbacks. He doesn't want to talk about he did that preparing, of course.
Sure, sure. I mean, the first question in the conference –
questions.
Yeah. The first question in the damn press conference is, I remember hearing it because we did have it live on NGSCSports.com earlier, and you could still hear it on our Spreaker player, by the way, if you're interested. But the first question I heard out of the gate was, hey, which quarterback are you going to play? I'm like – Can we let it marinate a little bit more before we come out with that? I mean, but, you know.
And it was already known. It was already known he was playing both quarterbacks. So I quickly threw a frown there like, dude, you already know he's playing both quarterbacks. And Coach Kelly was kind of anticipating a question for 2015. So he deflected that right away by saying, just want to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, this is for here. You know, we're not talking about the 2015 season. This is about the Music City Bowl. But, yeah, there's a question about how that will work for the coach. As far as for LSU, it's the Mad Hatter. It's Les Miles, and it's always entertaining to have him there. And one of the most entertaining things about Les Miles is you can't hear Les Miles. And he was even a couple of times, you know, a couple of us were like, hey, you know, coach, you can – he kind of leaned over when he had a chance and said, that's about as loud as I speak at a press conference.
I say, hey, the mic is your friend there, Les. I'm just no.
Yeah, gotta save my voice for the game, boys. But
that's true.
You know.
Let me. So, and something else you touched on there too with Coach Kelly and his vision of long term. You had asked him that question, like you mentioned, and he mentioned it was also about teaching the younger guys to prepare for a big stage like this. And I think that's what caught me. With the question that you posed is I didn't even think of the concept that if you have a freshman, sophomore or whatever, they've never really experienced like this. But when they are the team leaders, theoretically, in 2, 3, 4 years, they will now know what it is to prep and then be able to show all those around them how to do it. And I'll say this. You've said a lot for Coach Kelly's approach. But although mumbling as he may or may not have been, what was your big takeaway that you can give us from Les Miles in the press conference?
Well, with Coach Miles, you know, it's basically the same thing. Number one, he's going to give it to you straight. He knows that he has a young football team, especially a quarterback with sophomore Anthony Jennings. You know, wasn't very effective this season, so he knows he's going to have to lean on his running game. I did ask him about running back Leonard Fournette, highly touted out of high school, of course, big physical young boy, a young man, which who has to, of course, as I always have said, his Friday game now has to translate to Saturday. And it's a good point you brought up about Kelly and the young kids, because Coach Miles spoke of that as well, about preparing these kids who were so used to being stars in high school. And some of these kids go to small schools that don't get the hype. But when you go play in the SEC or the ACC, you have to prepare these kids all over again, because although they were always prepared for the hype where they were, they're not prepared for what happens, for example, here in the SEC. And it's a learning experience, and the coaches have to make sure that they blend these kids in so that they get to understand little by little, so that when it's their time, they're prepared.
Absolutely. And that's a strong mantra. Again, a lesson I learned just from listening to this press conference and the little things like that, you know, are the reason why those coaches get paid what they do to do what they do in their respective prestigious programs. Got about a minute left here, so we got some time for some more questions. With all your vast football experience covering the sport and all that, and what you've heard so far, what do you expect the game to be as far as its own identity? Is it going to be a tough slobber knocker kind of game? Do you expect it to be a shootout? What do you see?
Well, the LSU defense gives up 17 points a game. The Notre Dame offense has been basically ineffective all season and filled with turnovers. So I'm expecting, one of those slobber knocker turnover, basically turnover filled games. The weather may not help here as well. Remember, you're talking about an LSU Tiger defense going against a young Notre Dame offense. So it's going to be interesting to see if strength beats youth, or if youth can kind of outmaneuver and outfinesse the strength. But in the end, LSU wants to run the football. They want to make it. They want to pound the football. They want to run it down Notre Dame's throat. It's going to be the question of, can Notre Dame stop that? And can Notre Dame, more importantly, score enough points to win the game?
Well, I'm sure if nothing else, Notre Dame does not want to repeat the last time they played the SEC in a bowl game in that national championship versus Alabama. I'm just saying. So, Chris, do you have anything?
No, I was just thinking, do you think that the Notre Dame's offense can score a passing touchdown against LSU? And you're saying they're trying to run the ball, the LSU's going to run the ball, but really the LSU defense only gave up 9 passing touchdowns in the year. 6 of them came through 3 games.
So, yeah, what are Notre Dame's chances in the air, I guess, is the question, Ralph.
Well, the question is going to be, it goes down to Golson. Golson's got to hold on to the football. He's got the tools. He shows what he can do. He can move the football. The problem is what's been during this season is keeping the ball. You can drive down the field as far as you want it. There's been plenty of times Notre Dame would drive the football down the field only to turn it over in red zone or close to the red zone. You're not going to score 3 points or 6 and 7 that way. You've got to avoid those turnovers. That's going to be the big thing for the Notre Dame offense. If they can avoid that, then Notre Dame has shown what they can do on offense. I mean, Tyron Folston, their running back, 816 yards and 5 touchdowns. He can be productive at times. If he can help Everett Golson, and again, they can keep the football, and Notre Dame stands a chance.
Basically, whether you're a college football team, a high school football team, an NFL team, or a peewee football player, the bottom line is this, Pop Warner, whatever. If you turn the ball over, you can't win the damn football game. It's that simple. All right, Ralph Garcia, that was fantastic. Before we let you go here, go ahead and give us your last points or shout-outs or whatever you need done here on the Student of the Game.
Well, as always, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Student of the Game. Of course, our website is ngscsports.com. Remember, tomorrow I will be hanging out at the Music City Bowl, and we'll make sure to give you, whatever we always do, football talk, just the way you like it. Thank you, Kyle. I'm going to head on out now to the media reception at the media hotel and hang out and make some new friends and drink some non-alcoholic beverages and eat up as many hors d'oeuvres as I can.
Straight balling. That's what I want to hear, Chief. All right. Thank you very much, Ralph.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good evening. Student of the game.
Even gives the plug last bit there. Got to give it up for Ralph Garcia, CEO and host of the NGSC Weekly, Tuesday nights here on NGSCSports.com. Also wrote a preview there that's on the website where you can also hear the press conference as well. It is embedded in the article, so it's a one-stop shop for all your Music City Bowl preview needs. So, hey, look, I said it earlier. I'm not a college guy first, but that was fun.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
I'm just saying. So let's go right into it, guys. From the good news to the bad news, at least if you happen to be a coach, a lot of talk amongst coaches there with Les Miles of LSU and Brian Kelly of Notre Dame. But we're going back to the NFL. And, well, they call it Black Monday in the NFL ranks. And usually 5 or 6 NFL coaches get the axe about this time of year. Well, the good news is today it was only 4. Well, that's good news unless you're one of the 4 in question. And, of course, I'm going to open up here with this one. Probably the most obvious of the 4 being, everybody say it at once, Jim Harbaugh. The rumors surfaced in preseason this year, and whether you believe them then or not, now it's not just rumor, it's fact. The 49ers, even before the locker room was cold, parted ways mutually, in quotes, with Jim Harbaugh. And just before we went on air here, the reports were that he was flying to Ann Arbor, presumably to accept the Michigan deal. Nothing is official yet, as I've seen, but the likely pontificated arrival point of Jim Harbaugh at that point. Weasel, I'll toss it to you first. What do you got?
Yeah, pretty much. I think Michigan, they needed that, coach, and they can instill discipline. And Harbaugh, I mean, he turned around the 49ers.
Yeah.
They were pretty much before then, they weren't really relevant for
well,
too long.
They were a good punchline to jokes.
But he's Harbaugh is going to get a I think it's going to be a record deal. That's going to be one of the, he'll make him one of the highest paid coaches
around $8 million a year.
Hey, that's not bad.
I mean,
not bad.
It's good if you can get it. Sure. But Chris, let me take this to you. As far as Michigan goes, I mean, a lot of people when Urban Meyer arrived in Ohio State, you know, they were like, oh, that would be a huge impact. Urban Meyer goes out his first season, although Ohio State was under bowl game probation, goes undefeated. Do you think Jim Harbaugh can do the same sort of thing in Michigan?
I believe he will. It's going to take him a little longer than Urban Meyer has, because Urban Meyer was basically given a team. Michigan hasn't been relevant the last few years. Up there, I mean, they've been going through a coaching carousel the last 5-6 years. They've had 3 different coaches.
Right.
So, I mean, everything they've been trying hasn't worked. So it might take them a little longer, but it is the Big Ten, and it is a weak conference. And when you have teams that excel in, like, Wisconsin there the last couple of years and Michigan State, Michigan will get relevant again. It just might take them, like, a year or two to get his recruiting back in, because look what he did with Stanford out there.
Oh, sure.
In the Pac-12.
Right. And I mean, look at that. Look at that as far as a recruiting tool goes, right, for reputation. I mean, you've won a national championship and you've made it to the Super Bowl. And you're one guy getting groped in the end zone away from winning it. I mean, there's not many guys out there that can say that are currently on the market. I'm just saying. Granted, me personally, I'm still kind of shocked he took the demotion. But by the same token, if they're throwing that much money at you, if it's that big a program where you'll have that much control, because let's call it what it is, Harbaugh wants control, and he's going to get it, bottom line. So we'll see, you know, we'll see how he does getting back into the swing of recruiting. I don't think it'll be a problem that a lot of people do, but a lot of people tend to forget that he won that that national championship with Andrew Luck not many years ago. I don't know. Anyways, so the next guy here on the list, not only was the GM of this organization also fired, but the head coach, Sexy Rexy Ryan, finally getting the axe after years of pontification that will happen. The Jets part ways with Rex Ryan. Chris, thoughts?
Yeah, well, we saw it coming. I mean, they had a really bad year going 4-12.
Right.
You know, Rex Ryan, every year there's, you know, it's New York market. Every year it's Rex Ryan, also Tom Coughlin. Rex Ryan got the axe this year just because it's kind of like, what have you done for me lately type deal up there. Yeah. For them. And he hasn't made the playoffs the last few years. So we saw it coming with the GM, John Idzik, getting fired too. I mean, that was a good job too, because they brought him in to try to get some players in, you know, to try to help, and he hasn't done much. I mean, he's actually helped back to get the Geno Smith, which hasn't worked out for them except for yesterday's game.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll get to yesterday's game soon enough in the podcast here. But next on the list, and I'll go to you for this, Weasel, because I think this one brought peace to your household, because a lot of Bear fans were calling for this one, both the GM and the head coach in this case, the head coach being Mark Trestman, parting ways with the Chicago Bears. Weasel.
Well, the thing about Trestman is that their locker room, there was a lot of talking going on.
Yes.
And their offensive coordinator, I forgot his name, but he was supposedly said some like bad stuff about Jay Cutler and saying maybe that the contract was ridiculous and stuff like that. And he went to the media and said sorry and was crying and stuff.
Oh, yeah. But, he's crying because he knew at that point it's too late now.
But the thing about Trestman, yeah, I don't think the offensive players, they had so much talent there. And I think they just had it. And people talk about Trestman always. And then you got the GM. You don't hear that usually from, you know, fans talking about, oh, I want my GM fired. It's usually just Trestman. Now,
or the coach, right? Yeah.
The only thing I'm saying about the Bears for Cutler is that the GM who was responsible for making that
that was involved with that contract,
the Jay Cutler contract, it was like $128 million, but the most important part was $58 million guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
So He's already due, I think, about $14 million this season. Next season, it's going to be even more. So,
well, let me shorten it for you with a phrase. The highest paid quarterback right now. Does that sound like it should fit Jay Cutler based on what he did this year? I don't either, and that's what people are crying about.
I think someone had to get fired because of that.
Yeah, I can't front on that. At the time, I say at the time, it's kind of what they had to do. They had to keep Cutler because up to that point, he's still the best, arguably the best Bears quarterback in franchise history. You got to go back to the days of leather helmets and Sid Luckman to get a guy who's comparable, okay? But by the same token, I get why they felt like they had to fire him too. So, and the fourth guy on the list, I'm not so sure I buy into it, but Atlanta Falcons recently parted ways with Mike Smith. I don't know if you guys have a vote on this, but let me be clear. When you have backups to backups to backups on your offensive line getting hurt, and you still are one game away from the playoffs, you know what I don't do? Fire the coach. I mean, am I completely out of my mind here? And one of you guys, please step in if you think so.
Yeah, I think you are, because Mike Smith's been on my hot seat for the last 2 years anyway. He's doing the I can't think of the guy's name. He was cussed at the Bucks and went over to the Colts.
Oh, Dungy.
Right. You know, he did them. You know, led him to lead the NFC South, make it to the playoffs, can't win a playoff game. You know,
Well, they won a playoff game. They beat the Seahawks.
Right. Well, yeah, one game. But I don't think, you know, he's been on the hot seat. He hasn't been known much with the offense they have. The defense has been horrible. I mean, for the Falcons right now, what they really need to do is go off of a defensive-minded coach to try to solidify that defense and try to make them back to the way they were before. He just doesn't have it. Mike Smith, like I said, he's been on the hot seat the last few years. So I wasn't surprised for me that they let him go.
I don't know. Maybe to call it a surprise is a bad choice of words on my part. I just don't think it's the right move. Now, granted, now that they've already done it, I think you're right that they need to go defensive-minded. But, yeah, the Falcons have a history, basically, of bad defense. Even the team that played in the Super Bowl against the Broncos didn't necessarily have a great defense, per se. Yeah, that's a Jamal Anderson, Chris Chandler throwback. What? What you going to do, Weasel? Nothing.
What?
Weasel, Weasel!
Yeah, boy.
That was just a gratuitous one there. I had no reason to use that. Anyways, but I'll say that. I don't know. I don't think Mike Smith's the problem, and that's just where I'm going to leave it. I don't know. Apparently, Chris disagrees with me, but that's allowed. That's what makes this show good. I'm just saying. All right. Let's go ahead and get to the games, gentlemen. Leading it off, let's go ahead and get some of these games that didn't matter out of the way first. And, well, this game kind of mattered. The Cowboys faced off against the Redskins. Chris.
The Cowboys were looking for a first-round bye as they crushed the Redskins 44-17. The Cowboys would need Seattle and Arizona to lose and a Green Bay to Detroit tie to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Tony Romo was 22 for 34, 299 yards with 2 touchdowns on INT. Usually Romo falls in the month of December, but for the whole month of December, he completed 75% of his passes with 12 touchdowns and only 1 INT to secure a playoff spot.
So much for that. So much for that legend. It's about time. I'm just saying, especially if you're a Cowboys fan at this point. Yeah.
RG3 was 27 for 41, 336 yards with a touchdown, 2 INTs. And a lost fumble. DeMarco Murray, he had 20 carries, 100 yards, and a touchdown. He set the franchise record for most rushing yards in a season with 1845, surpassing Emmitt Smith's 1,773, what was set in 1995. Most important stat for DeMarco Murray, though, is that he completed a whole season. He played in all 16 games.
Yeah, that is huge. That is huge. And I'll put it I'll ask this question quickly, gentlemen. Pop quiz. Tony Romo, MVP candidate. Weasel.
He should be at least talked to, like about top five, something like that.
Okay, in the discussion.
He should be, yeah.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah, he should be in the discussion, yes.
No! DeMarco Murray's carrying that team. Are you high? Anyways, but yeah, no.
I was just looking at the month of December for Tony Romo.
Okay, well.
The thing is when you have a good passing game that's working, it makes DeMarco Murray's job a lot easier.
That's true, Weasel. Well, but when I believe
but when you have a good running game, it makes the passing lanes open easier.
Yeah, damn, you just got a double team there.
Both ways. Both ways.
That's what we're saying.
Just saying.
Fair enough. Chris, carry on.
All right, Dez Bryant had four catches for 99 yards with two touchdowns, both touchdowns on the day. He passes Terrell Owens for the most receiving touchdowns in the season for the Cowboys, which he has 16. Owens had 15 in 2007. So a lot of records broken on this day. DeSean Jackson for the Skins had two catches for 86 yards. He had a touchdown, which was for 69 yards.
All right.
So the difference in the game was the turnovers, four for the Skins, one for the Cowboys. But, you know, there's reports that Jay Gruden and RG3 are going to try it back. So,
yeah.
Do the Skins, what the Skins do at the QB position, they give RG3 another shot, do the Colt McCoy thing since Jay Gruden's back, or even Kirk Cousins?
I mean, I say they make it an open competition. And if it's truly an open competition and his body and mind are right, I think we'll all agree that RG3 will win it. If he's not right yet, he shouldn't start and he won't, because Colt McCoy has proven that he could step in. Kirk Cousins' stock is kind of falling. I think he's going to be the third stringer now, but, you know, I mean, that's a good, I think that's a pretty solid take, yes? Okay, fair enough. People are nodding right again. But, cool. All right, with that, the next game, staying in the NFC East, the Eagles faced off against the Giants. Chris, what do you got?
The Giants fall to their NFC East rival, the Eagles, 34-26. And Tom Coughlin's job is still safe for the time being. Neither team had a chance to make the playoffs. The Eagles ended up on the outside looking in with a 10-6 record, and Giants ended with a 6-10 record. Some notable stats: Mark Sanchez was 23-36 with 292 yards with two touchdowns on INT. Eli Manning was 28-53 for 429 yards with a touchdown and an interception that came late in the fourth quarter. 21 of Eli's targets went to the Offensive Rookie of the Year candidate, Odell Beckham Jr., who finished with 12 catches, 185 yards, and a touchdown. Ninth straight game with over 90 yards receiving.
So let me get this straight. Just a couple weeks ago, we asked if Odell Beckham is an acceptable candidate. You said he's incomplete. Now I just heard you say Rookie of the Year candidate. Did you come around?
Yes, I did.
Okay, fair enough. Continue.
Jordan Matthews was the leading receiver for the Eagles with 8 catches, 105 yards with a touchdown. Difference in the game was a blocked punt return for a touchdown in the third quarter that put the Eagles up 24-16. But what I want to touch on is, look, Sean McCoy, he's in a contract year right now. Does he hit the free agent market or does he re-sign with the Eagles?
Honestly, I think the Eagles need to do this carefully. They could let him test it, but and tell me if you guys think I'm wrong here, but I think his main role is as a perception threat. People have to think about him being a threat at the very least. Whether he's lost a step or not, I can't speak for that. I don't think he has. But let's just put it this way. As the Eagles are concerned, it's going to be really tough to continue to have a successful Chip Kelly offense without the threat of without a legitimate running threat being present. So if they're going to let him test it, they need to be very careful with that. I would not franchise him. He's not going to be worth that kind of money, especially in a single year. I don't know. Weasel, anything to add to that? Or are you set?
Nah, I'm good.
Fair enough. Okay, in that case, you better be ready to go, because the Bears faced off against the Minnesota Vikings. Walk us through it, Weasel.
The Vikings at home end the season with a bright note with a 13-9 thrashing. Well, not really, but
they beat them. 13-9 thrashing. Weasel, Weasel.
Yeah, boy. Against the Bears. So Bears quarterback Jay Cutler, 172 yards passing. He was sacked twice. You got 17 carries for about 51 yards was about it. They had a... Matt Forte. So he, that was about it. And the thing is that just Cutler right now is, he's not producing, and a little bit more on that later.
Not producing. A lot of people would be a lot more harsh with their description, but we'll go ahead and go with that. This is a family show and we're not Bears fans. Continue.
So Vikings rookie quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, he had 209 yards, one touchdown, 190. He was sacked three times, and I think it's a good year for Teddy, and the guys got what it takes.
So you see promise. Okay, yeah. Interesting. I know the secret agent of sports, Chris Rizzo, would vehemently disagree with you, but he's a hater. Continue.
And Matt Asiata.
Asiata! Did we sprinkle some Asiata in this contest?
He rushed for 91 yards in the game, and new to me, Vikings wide receiver Adam Thielen. He had 68 yards and a touchdown.
I think he's new to a lot of NFL squads in general, but he was the one that sprinkled the Asiata on it. He got the touchdown. Mike was just kind of there. Well, fine. I got all excited.
All right, so.
Things are better with cheese.
So just recently, the Bears, the head coach, Trestman, and the GM were fired. And I think it has a little bit to do with Jay Cutler. Because the guy has talent all around him, and he just finds ways to mess up. But the thing about it was that he got a $128 million contract. Right. I think $58 million is guaranteed.
Right.
And he's still, I think he's his upcoming season, he gets paid that much. I think it's like $15 million he gets. But should the Bears take it, take the money out of the bank and just tell Jay Cutler to go away? A $14 million go away, or should they stick with them and see a new offensive coordinator, what they have?
With that number being as Ugandan as it is, and with that staff being as talented as it currently is, I'm in the place you see what he can do with the next offensive coordinator. I'm going to call out what it is right now, mostly because of this production as it is right now, and the dollar amount attached to this guy, the Bears aren't going to get any better because they're hurting on offense just as much as they are on defense. And that's really just the gist of it right there. So, I would go into it on that. But, well, it's time to take a break because I said so, because I'm the host. And this is NGSC Sports. Boom. Back in a second. And we are back here on NGSC Sports. This is the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game. Of course, with me in studio to continue to bring you the action of the NFL. Weasel Weasel!
Yeah, boy!
And, of course, Chris Rankin on the line as well. Playing hurt. Do we have to put you on concussion protocol yet, Chris? You going to be all right?
Yeah, I'm going to be all right.
Okay. You're not faking your test results. You're good. Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm just you're answering pretty slow. Anyways,
it's still Monday, right?
It's still okay. Yeah, right. Well, hey, I'll tell you this: something we've learned on this Monday is, well, I want to give a spoiler. I'll put it this way: Saints, Bucks, Chris, go.
The Bucks had a 13-point lead going into the fourth quarter until they realized that winning would hurt them more than losing, and gave up 16 points. To lose to the Saints 23-20.
Like, you know you're in trouble when you have to refute rumors of a fix and or of tanking. I'm just saying. Chris.
Bucks QB Josh McCown was sacked in the end zone for a safety by Junior Gallette with 1:05 left in the game to seal the victory. Even though the Bucks lost, they were the winners of the game as they secured the top pick in the 2015 NFL draft.
I don't know what more I can say. That's awesome.
Doug Martin had a season high for 108 yards rushing. I mean, a season high of 108 comes in week 17 when Doug Martin 2 years ago was like the leading running back his rookie year.
He had a 245 yard game. Just saying.
Mike Evans, rookie receiver Mike Evans, had a touchdown, also 12th of the year and a franchise record for rookie receiver for the Bucks. Drew Brees threw three INTs, two were in the end zone, threw 17 on the season, and he also had his seventh career catch, a one-yard reception that was batted off the defense lineman back in his hands.
Wow.
So, question really, you know, should both teams draft a QB? Because, I mean, Drew Brees is getting up there in the years. I mean, look what the Packers did with Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. Got, you know, Aaron Rodgers sit on the bench for a couple of years to learn from Brett Favre, learn the offense, and look how well it's done for Aaron Rodgers. Should the Saints do the same thing, draft a player? I mean, it looks like the Broncos might be doing that with Brock Osweiler, with the behind Peyton Manning, maybe. But should the Saints draft a QB?
Well,
right now their backup quarterback is Luke McCown.
And we all know how that's going to go. I don't know.
Right.
First of all, let's be clear. Aaron Rodgers may have watched Favre, but Aaron Rodgers is an upgrade. And Favre isn't even the best. He's not even the second best in Green Bay history. I would put Bart Starr ahead of him personally. And you can send all your hate tweets on that topic at the SOTG. I ain't scared. But I don't know. Weasel, let me throw this one to you. What do you think of this concept?
Well, about getting a quarterback, I heard there's one. I think it's the Oregon guy.
That would be Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, so he's up there. If he's worth it, then the Bucks take him. But what they could do is do something like what the Broncos did. When they got Peyton Manning, they drafted in the second round. It was Brock Osweiler.
Osweiler. Close enough.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. So they drafted him in the second round, and the guy's been, you know, sitting for the past 2 years, 3 years. And it looks like most likely Peyton Manning's coming back next year. So he's going to be doing the Roger thing, just laying back and relaxing. So, but it just matters how good that Oregon quarterback is. And if not, they'll draft someone like in the second round or so.
Well, let me
That's
be,
a good prospect.
Let me be clear. Brock Osweiler, in my mind, is just the next Jim Sorge. Okay? Anybody remember that name? Good. You shouldn't. Because all he's famous for is being Peyton Manning's backup. I know you do, Chris. You know your stuff. But he would play... He would have two starts a year at least, playing in week 16 or 17 when the Colts had all but locked up playoffs. It's that simple. Osweiler ain't even getting those snaps in Denver for reasons I can't fathom. Okay, so he's had a throw or two, but no starts. I'll answer your question like this, Chris. Yeah, they should done that. They should do that rather. The problem is they should have done it in 2011 or 2012 when more good quarterbacks were available. In this current set of classes, nobody's really jumping out at me as being a solid quarterback. With fewer and fewer pro-style offenses being run in college, there's fewer and fewer guys that are worth taking the chance on. Now, I say all that to say this. To your point, if they bring in a guy so he can learn, that may be your best hope to have a seamless transition of success. So I guess I'm saying, yeah, I think you're right. Anyways, so there's evidence now that the Patriots may be subscribing to Chris's theory, and we saw a bit of that in this game as the Bills triumphed over the Pats 17-9. Now, Bills fans, settle down. Among several guys not playing in this football game, one Rob Gronkowski, okay? That means it doesn't count. Also, Brady played for only like a half. Yeah, Weasel, what do you got?
Was it Edelman? I don't think he played either.
Okay, well, there you go. I don't even know. I don't even know. But the Bills cared a lot more than the Patriots did. In this game, Jimmy Garoppolo actually had more attempts than Tom Brady and more completions, frankly. He was 10 for 17 to Brady's 8 for 16. Kyle Orton lost a fumble in this game. He only had 176 yards on 16 for 23 with a touchdown. Screw the stats. The point is, you know, the Bills A squad, Bill the Pats B squad, and this game didn't matter, and I really don't care either. So if you're the Bills, what is it you're trying to make happen in 2015? Gus Marone still has his job as the head coach. Whether that should be or not is a different question. But are the Bills just a quarterback away from being a legitimate franchise? Weasel.
Really the question is E.J. Manuel the franchise quarterback for their team?
Well, apparently they don't think so. They had a guy that we got replaced by Tim Tebow and Rex Grossman starting, so that's a big fat no to me. So,
yeah, that was one of their – it was like a early first-round pick. So
correct, 2 years ago. So,
but, But yeah, I think it comes down to him.
All right, fair enough. Chris, are the Bills a quarterback away from success?
Yeah, I believe they do. They have a defense that's on there that was one of the tops in the NFL. Kyle Orton retiring, I mean, he, you know, his career is kind of funny, but yeah, they need a quarterback. I mean, they have EJ Manuel and Jeff Toole on their roster.
I forgot that they had that tool on the
doesn't
roster.
Doesn't say much there. You know, if they could stay healthy on the running back situation too, I mean, they were banged up there with Fred Jackson. He was hurt for a little bit, and then CJ Spiller was gone for the season.
Right.
So with that defense there, yeah, if they can get a quarterback in there and then maybe a little better on the offensive line, then yeah, they are, you know, maybe away from a postseason.
Yeah, I like where you're at there too. Like you said, CJ Spiller missed most of the season. Fred Jack missed a lot of the season too. And they were still able to move the ball well with Anthony Dixon running. So they have that much support. Robert Woods, good receiver. Scott Chandler, good tight end. Sammy Watkins as a rookie made an impact as a receiver. I like everything on this offense except the quarterback. I don't know. I'm just saying. Speaking of quarterbacks in this week, the Miami Dolphins and New York Jets battled. And we saw an amazing quarterback performance. Chris, tell us.
Yeah, the Jets would come from behind to beat AFC East rival Miami Dolphins 37-24 in Rex Ryan's last game with the Mean Green. Geno Smith was an impressive 20 for 25, 358 yards, 3 touchdowns, no INTs, but he did lose a fumble when he was trying to carry the ball like a loaf of bread. It took the Jets 17 weeks to figure out that they had a receiver they signed in the offseason. Eric Decker had 10 catches for 221 yards and a touchdown. His touchdown coming off of a 74-yarder.
Say, what about Weasel's favorite first-round pick, Percy Harvin? Oh, yeah.
he didn't play in the game.
Just saying.
Ryan Tannehill wasn't that bad. He was 23 for 39, 259 yards with a touchdown. He was sacked 7 times and lost a fumble. Lamar Miller, 19 for 178 with a touchdown. The touchdown came on a 97-yard run after the Jets went for it on 4th-and-1. That 97-yard touchdown run is the third longest run in NFL history.
And it's certainly the longest run in franchise history and represents about, let's say, a fifth of Lamar Miller's yards on the... I'm kidding.
Get it right, it's an eighth. So with the collapse, the Dolphins in the second half of the season are going 3-5. You know, Joe Philbin wasn't fired today, but is his job safe there with the Dolphins?
It better be. Because I don't think this is his fault. A lot of the fans are clamoring for Philbin to be gone, and there's an element of ignorance here. Unless they were going to land Rex Ryan, which I don't think they will, they weren't going to get Harbaugh. Trestman may not be a good choice. Mike Smith in Miami makes a lot of sense to me. But he's not really a guy who would build up their defense. Something I heard floated the other day, and this is just one of those off-the-wall theories. Granted, I'll give credit to Chris Rizzo, the secret agent of sports, who is also a Dolphins fan, likes the concept of Joe Philbin staying as the coach if Rex Ryan is their new defensive coordinator. It's a very interesting thought in my mind. I'm just throwing it out there. Personally, I think Rex Ryan would do a lot better if he was wearing Falcons black and red, but I don't think that's going to happen either. Don't ask me why. Anyway, so as far as other games go, we're out of the games that mostly didn't matter. Here's a game that mostly didn't matter, but the Colts had to win it just because it might. I don't know. I'm throwing that around. Anyways, the Colts beat the Titans. They usually play close. They didn't this time, 27-10. The score, Andrew Luck had 160 yards in the air, only played the first half, still had 2 touchdowns. Matt Hasselbeck finished the game. He also threw a touchdown as well. Charlie Whitehurst continuing to play mediocrely for the Titans, 12 for 28 with 72 yards passing and a touchdown. Whoop, whoop. The big story for this one, though, lots of injuries in this football game. Granted, T.Y. Hilton was pulled early for protecting him, but Reggie Wayne had an 80-yard catch on the day and was tackled and hawked down just at the one because he pulled a hamstring. Already fighting a tricep injury. Here came this. On top of that, a number of defensive players and trenchmen, linemen, injured as well. And it could impact them next week in the playoffs. And, yeah, that. Leading receiver for the Titans was Delanie Walker. And just a pure absolute bit of sad for the Titans. The question is this, gentlemen. What position in that trash of a Titans team should be the focus? Weasel.
I'd say solidify the quarterback position.
You think it's the quarterback? Weasel, or Chris, rather.
What was that? I'm sorry.
What position should the Titans concentrate on first?
The what? I'm sorry. Again, phone's cutting in and out.
What position should the Titans concentrate on first going into the draft next year?
So, move the team.
Oh, okay. Relocation.
They did a lot. just close the team down and sell the players.
That'd make a lot of people sad in Tennessee.
There's nothing impressive on that team, really. I mean, the show. I mean, yeah, you can say quarterback, say running back. I mean, you got Sean Green there who's, you know, getting up there in his time, not all that great as a feature back. So running back. They got some young receivers, so I guess that might be the strength there. And the secondary and defense isn't all that great either. So,
I would start.
There's a lot
of
holes on the team. There's not one specific.
Well, where I would start is the trenches. I think the O-line needs to be completely shorn up before we bother with anything. Because here's the truth. I don't see a lot of good quarterbacks upcoming. It's really just that simple. Anyways, so the Colts did their part to try and attempt to gain the number two seed and creep up on the Denver Broncos. But the Broncos, all they needed to do was beat their visiting Oakland Raiders to get it. Weasel.
The Broncos at home. This one, yeah, they crushed them. they crushed the Raiders 47-14. Raiders rookie quarterback
Derek Carr.
Had 158 yards passing, one touchdown, and one INTs. And the Raiders, they weren't really existent in the running game. Artavius Murray had 60 yards receiving, and Jameis Alawale.
Jameis, I think, is his first name, but Alawale is really not bad, actually. I'll go with that.
He had a goal line touchdown catch. Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning threw for 273 yards, no touchdowns, and it was funny about, I think it was like 4 weeks ago, where Manning was on the field, and I think they were going to put in Brock Osweiler. He thought he was going into the game. He was all pumped up.
Yeah,
grabs his helmet, turns around, and he sees Peyton run back on there, and he's like, But he actually got to play a little bit. So he had 39 yards passing with a touchdown. It appears that the Broncos have a legitimate talent at running back. You got C.J. Anderson, 87 yards and three touchdowns. Broncos wide receiver Demaryius Thomas had 115 yards receiving, while Virgil Green had a receiving touchdown. So the Raiders did have a fumble, though, returned 18 yards for a touchdown by Keith McGill. So that guy, C.J. Anderson, most recently, he's been on the fantasy charts, and people are taking notice of him. But is he the real deal?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And mostly what puts me there is the fact that when Peyton Manning struggled, he's won games for them this season at times. Not that Peyton Manning struggles a lot, but, you know, the argument could be, oh, well, Peyton Manning sets up his production, yada, yada, yada. Okay, fine. But let's just say I think he's doing more at his age than DeMarco Murray did when he was that young in Dallas. I guess I just said that the Broncos have a better offensive line, too, than they did back then, maybe. I don't know. But for now, I'll say yeah. Chris, do you come out on that good? Or not?
What was that?
Do you think C.J. Anderson's for real?
Yeah, I believe it is. And then once Moneyball comes back for that, they're going to have a nice 1-2 punch with what they saw C.J. Anderson do this year with the absence of Moneyball and the other running back they lost throughout the year, because C.J. Anderson was really like a number three running back for them, and they actually brought up from the scout team to come up on with their injuries they had on the running back side.
I believe you're referring to Ronnie Hillman. So, boom. Yeah,
yeah, that was Ronnie Hillman. That's right.
But yeah, there you go. So we've decided the number two seed in the AFC. We know that the Pats are one, the Broncos are two, the Colts are three. Let's jump over to the NFC. The West has yet to be decided. We know that the Cowboys did what they were supposed to try to get their shot at the NFC's number two spot. The first thing they need to have happen was the Cardinals lose. Well, already the Cowboys are screwed. The 49ers managed to beat them, despite the fact that Ryan Lindley has thrown his first touchdown as an NFL starter. Whooped, whooped. And actually, it's his first two NFL touchdowns. Or no, not first two, I'm sorry, just his first one. Whatever. The point is this, he also managed three interceptions in the game. That's a fail. 2017, the victory for the Niners. Colin Kaepernick went 15 for 25, 204, with two touchdowns, including one to Anquan Boldin, who had a 281-yard day. Wow. And then Bruce Miller, the fullback, managed a touchdown as well. Look, all I have to say is you throw three interceptions and get outplayed by a team that does not care anymore. We've seen does not care anymore. And you're giving your best effort, and you're playing for something. I don't like your chances. The Cardinals are the, I believe they're the fifth seed. And what we do know is with this loss, the Seahawks, who played against the Rams, are now the number one seed in the West. Why is that? They had the tiebreaker anyway, but on top of that, they beat the Rams 20-6. Sean Hill was 26 for 37 on the day, 243 yards, but two interceptions. Seattle's story, once again, is playing at home and is playing defense. Russell Wilson, 17 for 25, 239 yards with an INT, but he's a national treasure. Are you noting my sarcasm?
It's the sarcasm.
Are you drowning in my sarcasm?
Yeah.
I throw you a life preserver, but we're still talking about Russell Wilson. Anyways, now Russell Wilson's a good quarterback. He's just overrated, people. I'm trying to tell you. A very rare sighting in this game, however, Marshawn Lynch, while he had 14 carries for 60 yards and a touchdown, also fumbled and lost the football. A rare thing there. Wouldn't matter on the day, as the Rams were 0 for 2 in the red zone, 3 for 12 on third down, while the Seahawks were successful in their only red zone attempt and 7 for 15, damn near 50% on third down conversions. I got to give Russell Wilson credit for that. His third down completion, conversion, whatever you want to call it, percentage, is among the better in the NFL. And hey, that's something you could pay a quarterback for and be quite reliable as a football team in the NFL, because offense, I'm just saying. Moving now further to the South, the last, well, I say the last, I don't know. Something about the NFC South just makes me think about last, because they're bad. I'm just saying. But what was essentially the NFC South Division Championship took place. The Carolina Panthers were hosted by the Atlanta Falcons. Chris, who was crowned the champion of the least?
Yeah, the Panthers defense came up big with two INTs, returned for a touchdown, and a fumble return 33 yards to step another, as they secured a playoff spot with the win over the Falcons 34-3.
And the Panthers are not the only loss. Officially the queens. The Panthers are officially the queens of the Cardassian sisters of the NFL. I'm just saying. Go Panthers. Woot. Not really. Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Right. As we said before, it wasn't just the only loss for the Falcons. Mike Smith was fired after two embarrassing seasons. He was there for 7 years in Atlanta. The Panthers make the playoffs with a 7-8-1 record. It's the second time in history a below 500 team makes the playoffs. There were not many stats in the game. Really, the Panthers rushed as a team, 35 carries for 194 yards, 5.5 average, with five different players. Four of them had over 40 yards rushing. Bright spot for the Falcons was Riley White. He had 8 catches for 104 yards, but he lost the fumble.
Yeah.
And the difference in the game was the turnovers, 3 for the Falcons, 0 for the Panthers. Yeah. Ron Rivera and the Carolina Panthers are, you know, the first coach and slash first NFC South team to win consecutive titles.
You're just throwing that Ron Rivera thing in there to tick me off, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So, with the win, the Panthers will host the playoff game. Should the NFL change this process? I know we've brought it up before. I mean, they're 7-8-1, and they're going to be hosting a 11-5 team.
Okay, guys, here's the theory. Just say yes after I say it to show the world you agree. If you lose, if you have a losing record, I'll even let 8-8 go, but even though that sucks too, okay? If you have a losing record, you should not be allowed to host a playoff team. You are the sixth seed, and you travel. That's your reward, right?
Right.
Okay, boom. I heard yeses from both. We can move the hell on. That's how you fix it.
Well, I would like to say about the Panthers, they at least did not back into the playoffs. The team had from the October 19th to November 30th, six-game losing streak.
That's true. They were 0-6-1, actually, after 7 weeks.
Yep. So, but the thing is they are not exactly, you know, powerhouse teams, but they had 4 wins straight to end the season against the Saints, Bucks, Browns, and Falcons.
So garbage teams.
They did what needed to be done.
They were the team that hurt Johnny Manziel. That's really the biggest serve. I'm kidding. I don't cheer for people getting hurt. I just cheer for the fact that we're talking less about Johnny Manziel in the press now. It's not his fault. It's the press. I'm just saying. Anyways.
All right. And then also, real quick, as I said, the Falcons, they should go after a defensive-minded coach or whatever. There's a report saying that they're getting permission to talk with the Lions defensive coordinator for the open head coach position.
I don't know. I think they should get Rex Ryan. I'm just saying. It won't happen. But
right, yeah. Well, I know. It's defense coordinator Terrell Austin is his first year as a defensive coordinator. You're going to try to give him a head coaching position. It kind of seems a little weird, but man, they are trying to go defensive-minded, it looks like.
Fair enough. So, yeah, that happened, and it sucks. But let's go over to the NFC North Championship. That was the Packers hosting the Detroit Lions. Where's the worries? Take us to it.
Yeah, boy. So, the Packers at home won the NFC North with a 30-20 victory over the Lions. Towards the end of the first quarter, Packers returner Micah Hyde had a punt return for 55 yards and a touchdown. You got Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford, 217 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, sacked twice. Running back for the Lions, Joqui Bell had 60 yards rushing.
I think Joqui? I've been saying Joik because I'm too lazy to use two syllables. Joiks! Golly, Scoob! Anyway.
Then you got running back Theo Riddick. He had a touchdown receiving while the Packers had two of them. So Packers' Aaron Rodgers, he threw for 226 yards and 2 touchdowns towards the end of the first half. The Packers had a big scare. Yeah. They had a big scare when Rodgers went down after completing a 4-yard pass for a touchdown. And he had to leave the game due to it was a calf injury.
Right.
And the thing was he was on the down, he was down on the ground, like, you know, in pain. And so got very quiet at Lambeau.
Yeah. Then it got loud again when he came back out. I heard there was an eruption there that rivaled something that would happen in Hawaii in a volcano.
He was able to come back in the mid-third quarter. And so sounds like he should be all right, but we'll see about the next game that they play.
Yeah.
You got Eddie Lacy has 100 yards rushing. Jordy Nelson had 86 yards receiving. And Cobb had 80 yards with 2 touchdowns. So the Lions will be without their star defensive tackle, Ndamukong Suh.
Why are they without Ndamukong Suh?
Well, last week, I think I made the line was that someone did an ankle stomp or something like that.
Are you referring to Dominic Royola, the center for the Lions who was suspended in this football game?
Yep. And
is that a leading question?
I believe one of my quotes was some lines along the lines of, at least it wasn't Ndamukong Suh.
Yep. Way to jinx him, Weasel. It's your fault.
Yeah, boy. So, Sue, he steps on the ankle of Rodgers, and it's the kind of thing, okay, you know, you know, it's not the flat ground. You're stepping on something.
Let's set this up a little bit. So it's a situation where Rodgers got knocked on the ground, and Sue is turned around looking at the play, and he just kind of takes a step back. That was accidental. I think we could all agree with that if you see the film. However, I think it's the next step where I think you should pick up your explanation.
Yeah, it's so he's Rogers is down the ground.
Right.
And when he puts his foot down, yeah, you step on someone's ankle, you know, it's like you'll know it and then you'll just move on.
And yeah, that first step, he'll be like, oh, and just kind of be shocked.
But I think pretty much he stepped back.
No. Don't give me pretty much. It's definitive what happened here.
He stepped back.
Thank you.
And he lifted his other leg. So all of his 305 pounds was being supported by Roger's ankle. And he's saying, of course, he's going to say that I didn't.
I didn't mean to.
It was unintentional, but yeah. It was just so bad. And the thing is you would think you would learn from the center last week that couldn't play their game against the Packers his incident.
Right. And when he stepped on Rodgers even read up and like was like slapping at him, which actually was
Get off me, pretty much.
Get off me. I mean, it was kind of pathetic looking, but I don't blame Rodgers for that. Be like, I think Rodgers doing that, and I don't think he did this to draw the attention, so to speak, but I think him doing that is the reason why Sue got busted. And I'm kind of thankful for it. And we've already mentioned he's going to be suspended for the next game. Weasel, take us through it.
I think it's just that, well, I think it's like a kind of a casino where you have all these video cameras and everything. And I think Sue thinks he can maybe get away with it every once in a while, which he may, but not today. No playoffs for him. So the Lions, they have the number 6 seed.
Correct.
And they will be playing the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game.
They have the 6 and not the 5?
Number 6.
Okay.
And they play the Cowboys on Sunday. And the Packers, with them winning, they have the number 2 seed. And to give Rodgers some time, they have a bye week.
So let's start at the beginning here. Chris, I'll start with you. One game suspension for Sue, is that enough?
Yeah, it is. They said he's going to appeal it, try and go on it. But the one game, yeah, I think it's enough for him.
Weasel?
I know he's had it in the past, issues, but...
I would say just because of the magnitude of when this occurred, you have next week, you have being the playoffs, they're in. And I would say if this happened halfway through the season, I would say 2 games, maybe 3 game suspension. But the thing is they needed him, and he's not going to be there for that's like one of their.
It's a playoff
biggest
game.
Games. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's no dancing. Just say it's a playoff game. You're right. That's a huge impact. I'm with you, Weasel. Here's where I'm at, though. Does anybody know how many incidents of this sort in Ndamukong Suh has either been fined or suspended in?
It's about 5 or something like that.
Chris, what'd you say?
I think it's 7.
9. This expletive deleted has had 9 incidents like this. Now, y'all cats are nice. Because y'all remember Greg Williams? Does that name sound familiar to you? Don't nod. If it does, tell him who it is.
Was he the defensive coordinator or the player that got stomped?
Defensive coordinator for who? New Orleans?
Yes, it was. Oh, he's the bounty guy.
Bounty gate guy. Very good. Now, on top of the fact that there has been 9 incidents with this guy, on top of the fact that Aaron Rodgers was already in a completely defenseless position, on top of the fact that the same franchise had the same problem just like last week, and on top of the fact that Aaron Rodgers was already injured in this game, Ndamukong Suh is lucky he's not out for half the next season. And I could probably argue for all the next season. I don't want to hear a thing about, oh, well, Ndamukong Suh, he's gotten much better, blah, blah, blah. No. Obviously, the message hasn't gotten through. Because when everything's hot, when the battlefield's going on, he's still the same guy. There's words I would use, but if I use, you know, certain words, I'd be like, oh, that's tantamount to the N-word, and that's racist. Okay, forget racist, all right? He is a horrible person and sportsman for this. 9 times. Like, I go to my local lunch place and get a free sandwich if I had that much. Okay, so perhaps that's a little bit of a crazy angle going with the free sandwich thing. But I'll say this, man. Nine times. Look, you want to be easy on first-time advantages? You want to even give second chances. Nine. You want to know what nine has in common with my thoughts? Is this enough suspensions? Nine, as in German for no. Half the next season, and to me that's generous. I almost wanted to say for all of the next season. But I don't think it's fair to penalize, you know, the fans of the Detroit base that much. Either that or his fine needs to have seven digits on it.
Yeah, I think back in the day he stepped on someone's arm, and I think he was the guy that did the kind of a helmet stomp. The guy that was near the goal line, and he just...
Against the Packers, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. He does like a little backwards, like a little kick and stuff, and it's like...
Oh, yeah. And this is at least his third time in a game involving the Packers. There could be more than one there. I don't know.
So,
and, you know, I won't even get into the crotch kick on Matt Shaw, but whatever. And all I know is ever since then, he's throwing pick sixes.
With Ray Rogers responded, it was understandable.
Yeah. Because, yeah.
Because 305 pounds on your ankle after you've maybe been hurt with a calf injury, that's messed up.
I mean... I'm all for people getting a second chance. But you see an arsonist near a house bending over with a lighter and a kerosene-soaked cloth. Yeah, it's time to throw the law at it. I'm just saying. Anyways, so on a happier note, the Chargers faced off against the Chiefs. We're here, at this point, this is the beginning of the cascade of teams still vying for a spot as the AFC's sixth seed. Well, what had to happen first, the Chargers had to win this game to get in. The Chiefs needed this game and a lot of others to fall their way to get in. One thing we could say positively, the Chiefs won, the Chargers are out. Something else that I'm happy to announce, that despite the best efforts of backup quarterback Chase Daniels, who started in this game over Alex Smith, throwing a pass to Dwayne Bowe, on the goal line, Dwayne Bowe fumbles the ball into the end zone. Travis Kelce recovers it for a touchdown as a tight end, making it impossible for the wide receiver to score for all of 2014. Number of passing touchdowns to a wide receiver for a Kansas City Chiefs, zero. Congratulations. I feel like I should have some music for this.
Dwayne Bowe was a great player early on in his career and stuff.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, I mean, he would make the plays and stuff.
He had promise. I don't know that he was great.
Well, I mean, early on. But now it's like, you can't get a touchdown, just one. So.
He's the opposite of Lay's potato chips. He can't have just one.
I think it's, yeah. Good old J.J. Watt coming up with that. The guy has three touchdowns, and he doesn't play offense.
Burn. And although J.J. Watt didn't score a touchdown this week, he still had more points than Dwayne Bowe. More on that later. Chase Daniels, though, filling in for Alex Smith, did an admirable job. 16 for 27, 157. Not great, but good enough. Phillip Rivers lost a fumble in this game, but he had two touchdowns in the air, 291 yards, 20 for 34 on the day. Brandon Oliver, the running back, had four carries for 71 yards and a touchdown. Jamal Charles was kept relatively quiet on the day. Oh, wait, that says two touchdowns? No, that's two interceptions. Yeah, my bad. Phillip Rivers didn't do well. Travis Kelce had a touchdown on the day on the recovery we just talked about. But yeah. At the end of the day, guys, I think if everything stayed healthy, that the Chargers would have been a playoff team. They just aren't because issues. So that sets the table for the Houston Texans. They faced off against the Jaguars. And if they win this game and have just a little bit of help, which they got from the Chiefs, they had a shot at the sixth division, at the sixth spot in the AFC North playoffs. Well, they took care of business. Blake Bortles and company, hopeless to really compete against that defense as well. Let's put it this way. Case Keenum may have thrown him a pick six, but it still wasn't enough. The Jags lose 23-17. Blake Bortles did have a decent day throwing the football, 14 for 33 with 117 yards, but it was CS3, Cecil Shorts III, who threw a touchdown pass. Bortles also carried the ball three times for 61 yards. Case Keenum, playing for the Texans, lost a fumble. but threw two touchdowns, three if you count that pick six, but I don't think that Texan fans do. Jordan Todman had a touchdown yet again on the ground for the Jags, but the story of the game, the sacks, five sacks for the Texans, three for the Jags. What else is significant about three sacks? That's what J.J. Watt had. Boom. And yes, I'm wearing my J.J. Watt jersey that my wife gave me for Christmas. What?
Don't think we mentioned, I believe it's Justin Houston from Kansas City. The guy had, I think, 22 sacks this season. So it was half, I think, half a sack away from tying the record.
There you go. So. And then, but to finish up this game.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it a little before.
Yeah. Well, to finish up this game, the safety that J.J. Watt scores also more points than Dwayne both scored all season.
See, so I think that's what, like, was it four or five touchdowns and 2 points?
So anyways, they did their job there, which means that the Texans' hope fell to the Ravens losing their game. Unfortunately, the Ravens were playing against Connor Shaw starting for the Cleveland Browns. And while it looked like a chance there with 10-6, with a 10-6 lead at halftime, the Browns blew it. The Ravens prevail and make it so three AFC North teams are playoff bound. This game wasn't really about quarterbacks. I mean, yeah, sure, Joe Flacco threw a touchdown, and that's nice. Or two touchdowns, rather, and that's nice. My story for this game, Justin Forsett, 17 carries for 119 yards to set all that up. Connor Shaw, 14 for 28 with 177 yards, threw a pick, lost a fumble, and I'll give the Browns credit that they slowed the Ravens a lot in the red zone, but the Ravens were able to sack Connor Shaw four times and only get to Flacco once. The Ravens' defense and running game playing like the kind of like the same fashion that they're more known for, they, despite the fact they have high-flying receivers, wins the day and the sixth seed in the playoffs. So that's decided, all except for one thing. Who is seat number five, and who wins the AFC North? That championship game was played Sunday night. Weasel Weeze, Steelers, Bengals, go.
You got the Steelers at home. They defeated the Bengals to win the NFC North. Now,
the AFC North.
Yeah, AFC.
That one. Right, yeah. Got it.
So, Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown had a 71-yard punt return for a touchdown. You got Steelers quarterback Big Ben Roethlisberger, 317 yards, two touchdowns, one INT. And the big thing with him is you can see how the game goes by how many sacks there are. He was not sacked that game, so good for him. Now, in the fourth quarter, though, you had punter Brad Wing. Yeah. He threw.
I wish everybody saw the face that Weasel made when he's talking about Brad Wing. Why is he throwing this pass? What the expletive deleted is this?
It's like, yeah, he threw a pass, but I think someone was coming right at him to tackle him. And so he's like, 500.
Oh, God. Blow the whistle.
So he couldn't take the, take the sack or anything, or he threw it away. He had to throw it up in the air. And of course, it was intercepted. So you got Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton, 244 yards, two touchdowns, two INTs. No. Now, little quick thing I think they showed in the game was that he has, what is it, like 26 or 24 interceptions for passes that were intended for A.J. Green, which is, that's pretty bad because he throws a jump ball with him all the time. And, of course, you're not going to win them all.
It's one thing to trust your receiver. It's one thing to meet in love with your receiver.
Yeah. He forces it sometimes. But, so you have, Bengals running back Jeremy Hill, shown promise this season, had 100 yards rushing. And you have Giovanni Bernard,
the other running back.
And the tight end, Jerian Gresham, they both had touchdowns. So now, big thing about this game was that both Bengals and Steelers lost key players due to injury.
Yes.
He got in the mid for fourth quarter. Green lost a fumble and got hit pretty bad. It's one of those ones that you kind of cringe on. And he had to leave the game due to a concussion. And Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell, 8 rushes, 20 yards, but also had 6 catches for 80 yards. And in the mid third quarter, this one was a little bit controversial. Bell caught a pass in the middle of the field, and Bengals safety Reggie Nelson went low, and he pretty much dived and hit his, I think it was his left knee.
Right.
And I know that, like, you know, you're supposed to, like, you know, keep your shoulder down, wrap the legs type of thing, but everybody was freaking out, like how the, I'm sure the Packers were about Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
Because Le'Veon Bell was in pain on the ground.
Yeah.
And feared if it was like an ACL, MCL or something like that. But right now, the latest is that it was just hyperextended.
Right.
So
he still isn't really exactly cleared to play, but it's not looking good. I'll put it that way.
But I mean, just hoping it's not one of those ligaments. That's the thing. Because those, it takes a long while to...
if you even come back properly.
To even come back, yeah.
And it's back to that thing of the defensive back's response will be, well, we're told to hit low, and then this is what will happen if we screw up. I mean,
it's kind of like, I think some players know, like Gronkowski for the Patriots. If you try to tackle him high, you'll fail. So, but it's just, yeah, it's the thing about hitting the knees. So it's legal, but... Yeah,
I don't know. It's a tough thing. I don't think anyone means to do that unless you're Ndamukong Suh. But the response is, what are they supposed to do? And I understand it. So, yeah, with that, the Steelers hold the 4th seed. The Bengals hold the, I guess it's.
I think it's the 5th seed.
Okay.
I have to set this.
Well, we're about ready to find out anyway, because we're going into the study hall. And nobody who's playing who will know what the seeds are. You'd really think I would have written this down, but I didn't. Go Kyle. Anyways, so how are we looking going into the playoffs with records, Chris?
All right, well, last week we were, me and you were both 12-4. Weasel was 9-7. So I still have a three-game lead going into the playoffs. And Weasel is officially out, as he is 13 games behind, and there's only 9 games left.
I guess in this case, 13, games. 13 is not a lucky number.
I'm still working on that single digits losses. So.
Well, wait a minute. Can he still make single? Can he still make second place?
Not second place. I just want to get single digit losses.
True.
The win. So.
Well. There's 11 games back. He's 11 games back right now. I mean, he's 13 games back right now. There's only 11 games to pick from. So if you lose every single game and he wins every single game, then yeah, he can get second place.
So you're Roots. Saying there's a chance.
I'll take it.
And with that, we'll head into...
He's 10 games behind you, so...
And I'm still 3 games back because the Falcons. Damn it. Hey, I was real smart picking that Chiefs game. I didn't know that Chase Daniel was going to start, but I was still real smart picking that Chiefs game.
Hey, I only recovered it, but the Chiefs went all season without throwing a touchdown to a receiver.
That's why I'm all that much more smart. Boom, baby. All right, walk us through it, Chris.
All right, so with our preseason projections going into here, for the AFC, you and Weasel both had 5 out of the 6 teams picked. Boom. In the preseason. I had 4 out of the 6. NFC.
Yeah, this is going to be bad.
Yeah, NFC is really bad. Weasel had 3 out of the 6, and me and you had 2 out of the 6.
Woot! What now?
Actually, technically speaking, that does put him in the lead for the moment.
AFC and NFC.
But I tied you in the AFC. But what I'm trying to say is this: my Super Bowl is the only Super Bowl that can still actually happen. I'm just. All right.
Yeah, that is true.
Boom. All right, let's get it.
All right, starting with the AFC, on Saturday night we have the Ravens at the Steelers. I would take the Steelers right here if Le'Veon Bell was healthy. Since he is not, the Ravens are getting down. We're getting Haloti Ngata back for this game.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Ravens just because of anticipating Le'Veon Bell, who's like, has over 2,200 yards of offense this year for him. So without him playing, that's going to hurt the Steelers. I'm going to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, considering that the Steelers' other options are, what, Dre Archer and Josh Harris, 156-pound running. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if he's that
small. Guys, yeah, I think it was like 165 or so.
But an undersized running back and a rookie out of Wake Forest is their main hope. I might have picked the Steelers, but I'm begrudgingly picking the Ravens. If the Steelers can stop Justin Forsett, that'll make it close. But, I mean, in this one, I'm daring the Steelers to try to run the ball past Haloti Ngata, and I don't think they'll do it with him and C.J. Mosley and Terrell Suggs and all them. Just, yeah. Weasel.
I think it's early on in the season, the Steelers had actually a pretty valid backup at running back. They had LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, well,
and so
that idea is up in smoke.
Yeah.
Boom.
So about 4 weeks ago or so, he I think he walked away from the team during a game, and he's been making comments and stuff that weren't very good for the locker room. And so they got rid of him. He went to the Patriots, and they're all happy. But
and you know, he's showing off the Patriot way.
Yeah, so the Dre Archer guy is about 100. And yeah, he doesn't weigh that much, but he is like really, really fast. But the problem is that the Steelers we're having is that Le'Veon Bell is an all-around back.
Correct. Well,
he picks up blitzes and catches the pass. He's a great runner, so it'll be missed. But I think the Steelers can still pull it off. I think Flacco's going to go throwing up those ducks a lot. So I think
the
Steelers got him.
Okay, there you go. Fair enough. He's trying to close that gap to single digits. Chris.
All right, so the other AFC game on Sunday is going to be the Bengals at the Colts. The Bengals are going to probably be out with A.J. Green with a concussion. Yeah, they did win games earlier in the year without A.J. Green, but you got the Colts with Andrew Luck. I'm going to go with the Colts.
With everything that the Colts are missing in terms of pain, and even against my better heart judgment and my need to pick up a game here in this round, I'm going to go Bengals, but let me tell you why. It's all Andrew Luck. It is the Andrew Luck show. That defense has just given one Peyton Manning a hell of a time just 2 weeks ago in order to, you know, get to the playoffs. Now, they need to do the same thing to Andrew Luck, and Andrew Luck doesn't have a C.J. Anderson to hand the ball off to. Also, the Colts defense can't stop the running combination of Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, in my opinion. I have the Bengals squeaking by and getting finally a win in the playoffs for Andy Dalton. Weasel!
I'm going to have to pick, I'm going to pick the Colts.
I knew you would.
Now, the thing is this can be a pretty high-scoring game, but I don't think that the Andy Dalton would be able to, recover from that kind of thing. So, and his main wide receiver, when he's out, they're a little shaky team, so I have the Colts.
Well, T.Y. Hilton also battling a hamstring, as is Reggie Wayne, as is
Reggie Wayne's a groin. So there.
Oh, well, that makes it better.
It's just a groin.
Yeah, it's a groin.
And Dwayne Allen, by the way, also hurt with a knee. So Kobe Fleener, woot. That's why I pick it, is because the weapons are all hurt. But hey, Luck could win this game. It's what Luck does. Like I said, this is a pick I'm making with my brain and not my heart. I'm just saying. Next.
All right. Yeah, they go into the NFC on Saturday. You got the Cardinals at the Panthers. Drew Stanton might be back for the Cardinals. The Panthers have played well lately, but their offense is going to struggle against the Cardinals defense. I'm going with the Cards.
I would have said the same thing about the 49ers offense. Very similarly built, however, to the Panthers. Let's put it this way. When the 7-9 Falcons won their game, it's because the other team, the New Orleans Saints, had a bunch of injuries on it. This team, the Carolina Panthers, is playing against the Cardinals. The Cardinals also have a bunch of injuries on it and a quarterback that hasn't won starting a game this year and has only thrown his first touchdown passes in his career last week. Ay, God, I got the Panthers. Weasel.
Well, the Cardinals, they were looking good early on with Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
But he, of course, got injured, put in the IR. And it's pretty bad when you're hyped up about getting Drew Stanton back.
I was about to say, let's not go down the list of all the players they lost and still won with. We'll be here for another hour.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that it's like Drew Stanton, woo! We're going to get him back. It's like, ugh.
about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Panthers have been respectable on defense lately, so I'm going to pick the Panthers.
I'm creeping up, Chris. Next game.
All right, you got the Lions at the Cowboys. No Donovan Smith for the Lions. The Cowboys have been playing well all around. I'm going to go with Cowboys.
I am too. This is by far the toughest game to pick, in my opinion. But I like that both teams have balance. I like that both teams have defenses playing better than you'd expect. But at the end of the day, no Ndamukong Suh means a lot more DeMarco Murray, which means a lot fewer mistakes for Dallas. I have the Cowboys. Weasel!
Suh did mess up big time, and his fellow players are going to feel it on this weekend's game. So, definitely got the Cowboys.
Bingo. There you go. So, hey, we all agreed on that. That's kind of a rare occurrence that we're so dissonant in our selections. But there you go. The study hall for this week. I'm hoping to pick up two games. That would be nice. But, yeah, we'll see. I hope I don't cancel myself out again, because then I'll be three games down going into... yeah, that would suck a lot.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No. Anyways, guys, excellent episode. Thanks to Ralph Garcia for checking in. And, yeah, catch us on NGSCSports.com. I will have the matchup mania up on NGSCSports.com on Wednesday night, maybe Tuesday night this week if y'all are good or if I'm good enough. Anyways, but until next time, everyone, catch us on Twitter. At the SOTG is mine. At Weasel the SOTG is Weasel's. At Ranking the SOTG is Chris's. And let's wrap this up because we're running wicked late. Class dismissed.